The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. For the most comprehensive industry news and information, visit our website at irei.com and sign up for our free daily news alerts.
There are not many things that Democrats and Republicans agree on, but one is that U.S. infrastructure is badly in need of repair and is even a national embarrassment in some cases. Now, both presidential candidates promised a $1 trillion infrastructure program to help rectify this situation. And though we are a year into the Trump presidency, there is no infrastructure program in play. But the Trump administration has come up with the outlines of an infrastructure plan that was leaked in recent days. And perhaps it was a planned leak to float the ideas, engage public reaction, which is a common political tactic. It is just a six-page outline, according to Axios, which is the organization that the document was apparently released to. And that outline does not include any really specific spending commitment. Now, one of the people who has reviewed this gesture drawing of a proposal is our guest, Jim Ryan. He's managing director of national accounts at Pravassi Capital Partners, making him responsible for leading the distribution strategies of the company's investment offerings. Now, among those investment offerings are new infrastructure investment funds. So infrastructure is, and for some time has been, on Jim Ryan's mind. Mr. Ryan's pedigree includes stints at Invesco and Morgan Stanley, where he was managing director of national accounts at both organizations on separate time periods, of course. As well as Van Kampen Investments, where he was a senior vice president and national sales manager prior to Van Kampen's merger with Morgan Stanley. Jim Ryan and I will talk about the Trump administration document, but also infrastructure more generally. Jim, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mike. Really appreciate you allowing me to join you today.
Absolutely. We're glad to have you, and let's talk about that alleged Trump administration document that serves as an infrastructure program outline, at least a very sketchy one at this point. What are the big, if you can actually point to any big takeaways, what would the big takeaways be?
Well, Mike, you know, politics being what they are and Washington, D.C. being what they are, I think there's at least consensus on one issue, and that is the necessary investment that is needed to make our country economically and globally viable going forward. And the bet, if you will, or the investment in infrastructure is paramount to the United States succeeding on the global stage in all businesses, across all industries, and certainly from a conveyance standpoint for global trade. It's imperative that some type of improvement and investment takes place, because depending on where you live in the United States today, there are some really major obstacles to economic growth because of infrastructure and the lack of investment over the recent years and, for that matter, decades. And it's interesting, if you look at the American Society of Civil Engineers, who put out a report card back in the middle of 2017, they actually rated our country, the United States. They gave them a D-plus rating on the current infrastructures, or the state of infrastructure in the country today. And that D-plus obviously raised a lot of concerns, both at the government level, but also at the major corporations in this country, because they understand how important infrastructure is, as I mentioned, to the economy. So going to your point about the Trump administration, obviously, things have evolved since tax reform. Things have evolved 1 year into his presidency. But make no mistake, there is major emphasis on by the administration and with members of Congress to make that public-private partnership to improve our infrastructure and, more importantly, to have us remain competitive on the global stage. So if I was to pick out one or two points, I would just highlight that the partnership of public and private is critically important. The federal government just doesn't have enough money to pick up the entire infrastructure cost. However, with private concerns, with government and private partnerships, certainly we can work through a number of the fundings, a number of the revenue sources, and certainly build out the necessary improvements for the country and in all major stakeholders.
Well, you know, the great thing about infrastructure, as you kind of mentioned, is that it works for everybody. Even if you don't own a business, even if you're just a person driving the roads or riding the freeways or using the electric grid or broadband, it has a positive impact on everybody. Everybody's in favor of good, strong infrastructure. Now, I believe that this document says that they're thinking in terms of grants, is what my understanding is. The Trump administration is thinking in terms of a grant type of system where they are going to not provide even half of the money, I don't think, at this point. But what does that type of system, can you draw any conclusions, Jim, in terms of whether it would be a positive thing for the private investor in infrastructure funds and various channels of infrastructure, private infrastructure funding?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, and you're right. If I look at the grants, proposal and how grants will be used, I like to maybe equate it or make the analogy to, let's say, seed money, or money that the government's willing to invest until certain revenue streams take place, and they can either get reimbursed on some of that funding, or through, let's say, revenues or through the issuance down the road of municipal bonds or other type of investment vehicles, they can maybe recoup some of their money. So, again, I think what the grant study is really trying to position is the idea that seed money and government initial providing of capital is a way to get projects off the ground, and then subsequent fundings by municipalities, cities, states, and private can come in after the fact, and the combination will get the projects up and rolling, obviously across a certain time period. Then some money is then reimbursed, so to speak, to the government, and or certain revenue streams are afforded to the local municipalities. And certainly, keep in mind, a lot of infrastructure that is built out ends up having a positive effect revenue-wise with tax receipts, because as industries, as companies flourish and grow their businesses, they increase their tax revenues to the state and the federal government. So that's the background of a lot of the grant discussions, and that is, ways that the government can kick off certain investments followed by state, municipalities, and or private, and in conjunction work through the kickoffs, if you will, of many of these projects.
And I was just looking at the Vox website, and they mentioned $200 billion in grants over 10 years is what they're talking, with the idea in mind that it would spur overall $1 trillion in infrastructure spending. That would count on the private sector to come up with $800 billion in investments. And the question, I guess, that a lot of people would ask, Jim, is there $800 billion over the next 10 years in private funding for infrastructure? Now, obviously, private dollars will make a headlong rush into something that pays well, that is going to yield a return, especially in this, so-called yield-starved environment that we're operating in. What about the $800 billion in private investment over the next 10 years, let's say? Are you confident that the private market can handle that?
Yeah, again, projections being what they are, I think it really is going to, come down to almost an industry to industry or project to project basis. And what I mean by that is, again, if you look out a year ago, or you look out, even during the campaign, you were hearing a lot of, you were hearing about the $1 trillion infrastructure commitment on investment. And at that time, you were hearing numbers more like 50-50, 50% public and 50% private. And now with tax reform and certain revenue streams maybe not being as great, you're now hearing this 200 to 800 ratio, if you will, of public to private money. And I will tell you that, certain industries such as, let's say, aviation and airport. One of the critical areas is the need and the necessity of seeing airports in major metropolitans build out and become more efficient. That, you know, the ability to move passengers more efficiently, quicker, with more runways. And we're seeing it right now in LaGuardia, in New York City, arguably the business capital of the world. The money that's been dedicated to LaGuardia, and that's in the billions of dollars. So can the airline industry in this marketplace help support infrastructure on the private side to the tune of, 4-1, using that 200-800? Absolutely. Where you're really going to have to look at, I think, more creative financing would be, let's say ports, shoreline, a lot of erosion of shoreline based on water levels, and if you believe in climate change and the melting of the ice caps and so on and so forth, and just water erosion, let's say in downtown Manhattan when we had the major hurricanes over the last 10 years, flooding in the lower half of Manhattan, that type of coastline and infrastructure needs to be built out. That's a little bit more problematic because you don't have as much of industry or corporate investment. So those projects become more difficult. But if you look at private toll roads, you look at aviation, you look at certain fiber optics, satellites, which are a very important part of infrastructure and in the way companies run their businesses, those absolutely have the necessary corporate and private interest to subsidize and, in fact, enhance. The number could actually be higher, but things that are more aligned with, let's say, water and sewer, coastlines, and things like that will have some difficulties, at least from a private standpoint, and that's where the federal money really should be earmarked.
Now, you have twice talked about tax reform, which was also tax cuts, and it sounds like what you're suggesting, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but, and there's been some argument about this, that tax reform, or the tax cuts at least, should not have come first, that infrastructure was something that Democrats and Republicans could agree on. And even though when the two parties agree on something, the one of the parties will tend to be resistant. Fact of the matter is that Chuck Schumer would come along very quickly if the infrastructure projects in the state of New York are funded to a certain level. And it's very easy to buy those Democratic crossover votes with something like infrastructure. But you have said, I mean, even if the federal government just decided we're not going to do the tax cut, we'll do infrastructure first, we'll even print the money and do a $1 trillion drop because the foundation of our economy is infrastructure. You mentioned in a previous conversation we had that the need in many of the blue states is really great. In fact, you mentioned the tri-state area of New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut alone, arguably needing $1 trillion in infrastructure projects right there, let alone the other 47 states. So we are, is $1 trillion even going to address the problem over 10 years?
Again, excellent point. There's been quite a few studies that suggest that, $1 trillion provides a lot of improvement, but that's improvement. It's not enhancement. And as this country continues to grow, as you see the Sun Belt, and let's say states such as Florida and Texas that continue to garner interest for new commerce and have favorable tax, corporate tax situations. It does beg the question: what type of opportunity sets are available given the nature of where business is moving, based on discounted tax situations, and what kind of monies are available for infrastructure? And that's why, one of the things that I tried to, highlight with you in our previous conversation is, the $1 trillion gets improvements done, gets bridges, gets certain types of growth as far as, let's say, additional runways and needed expansion on fiber optics and satellites and water and sewer and reclamation projects and dams, but does it actually enhance? And I would argue that the $1 trillion figure falls short of enhancements. It gets us to fixing current, our current infrastructure state, and improves our current infrastructure state. But really, there's been studies done that over the next 40 years, the need for infrastructure is more like $10 to $12 trillion. So I guess what your point is, Mike, and what I'm trying to relay here is really $1 trillion is a drop in the bucket to where, future investment would be, and that's a combination of growth, repair. Because, look, anything that's not enhanced or repaired short-term, we know will have to be enhanced or repaired longer-term. So we're always going to have the need for infrastructure improvement and enhancement, and we're always going to have, hopefully, as a growing economy, the need for to match and accommodate growth. So, again, the number that has been quoted over a 25 to 40 year basis has been more in the 10 to 12 to 15 trillion dollar versus just 1 trillion, which is kind of like a band-aid stopgap for future investment.
Do we have too much infrastructure in this country? I mean, we're looking at millions of miles of aqueducts and railroads lines and freeways, highways. The number of airports we have, the number of overpasses, bridges, and so on, never mind just building new infrastructure for developing areas. We have so much infrastructure that we have to maintain on top of what we might be seeking to build. Do we have just too much infrastructure in this country? I mean, might sound like an odd question, but I'm just wondering if our ability to keep up has just outstripped our ability to generate revenue on a governmental level.
Yeah, an excellent question. I think this is where technology comes in, and I think this is where infrastructure will evolve. The digital conveyances, and this is where fiber optics and satellites come in. Are there a number of businesses now that using the information or the information available through fiber optics and the satellites, are they allowed to, let's say, bypass some conventional types of transfer or conveyances? We hear about what Amazon's doing to brick and mortar. Does Amazon step away from, let's say, UPS and the U.S. Post Office and go the drone route and end up, taking trucks off the road and the need for enhanced roadways and toll roads? Do they take another technology such as drones or other ways to deliver products? It's a fascinating question because that's obviously the evolution of an economy. Seemingly, there's always new technologies that make other technologies, antiquated, and things evolve. I would say this, though. Because of the global economy, ports and airports are certainly going to be still major ways of transferring and transporting goods. But I think at the margin, technologies could modernize infrastructure and change infrastructure. Again, my Amazon example of will they be using Federal Express planes in the future, or will they be using drones, their own private air force, which is an interesting conversation in itself. But generally speaking, you still have too much product moving and too many goods and services moving through the conventional ways that it's hard to see that infrastructure is not an important, investment need for, decades and decades to come.
When I talk to people at the RIAs and I say, what are your clients telling you they're looking for in terms of investments? Infrastructure is right at the top of that list. They're very interested in infrastructure. They know that the governments at all levels are strapped. They see opportunity there. And we are seeing institutional players such as Brookfield and Blackstone and BlackRock and others that have been playing in the infrastructure field, moving over into the private wealth field. Yet the opportunities in private wealth right now seem to be somewhat limited. Where do you see, how kind of characterize for us, Jim, what do you think the opportunities are currently for private investors when it comes to infrastructure? And where is it headed? Do you see the opportunities starting to burgeon?
What's very interesting about tax reform, and then you put on, some of the regulatory changes that the Trump administration are implementing, and whether that's on the energy front, which includes pipelines and transportation of energy, whether it's on, Dodd-Frank and banks. One of the things that I think could actually, and again, going back to your earlier question about private financing, is you're looking at, and I know this is going on right now, the BlackRocks, the Goldman Sachs, the Morgan Stanleys, the JP Morgans, looking at capital raises with their institutional investors and actually bringing infrastructure projects and studies and funding where obviously as investment banks or commercial banks, they're looking for a return on their investment. So I think there's a ton of, and we're in the first inning on this. I think you're likely to see a number of private equity offerings run by some of the largest firms, including the ones I just mentioned, really end up being the backbone of many an infrastructure. Look, Goldman Sachs basically built a $1 billion headquarters in downtown New York City in Manhattan, and when the hurricanes hit, where the downtown got flooded and the various lines were shut down on subways for 3 months, that affected Goldman Sachs. So Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, they have vested interest in where their corporate headquarters, where their intellectual capital lies, for their employees to be able to get to offices, work with clients, and therefore have infrastructure that allows that. So I believe that really the next big move will be these firms, the Goldman Sachs, the BlackRocks, actually putting together with both institutional and different types of public offerings, investments that actually go directly to infrastructure, and it'll be everything from a private wealth management area or high net worth individuals to institutional accounts to, the mass affluent. I could picture private equity opportunities where John and Jane Doe have a $1 million investment portfolio, earmark $100,000 in their 401k or their retirement plan for infrastructures because they will have a competitive yield. They'll have the backbone of very strong capitalized investment banks, as well as very strong firms that enter into this. One of the areas we haven't touched is that if you really look at the firms that end up doing the work, the actual work on infrastructure, and whether that's private toll roads, whether that's putting a satellite into space, whether it's laying fiber optics, whether it's building out energy pipelines, these are highly capitalized, some of the largest firms in the world that have capital, the resources, the engineering, all of the applications, if you will, to build out infrastructure and meet the demands of capital. And I think that combination, again, of having private capital coming from investment banks and commercial banks, along with the strongest capitalized construction / aviation firms, will be able to afford opportunities to not only the individual investor, the institutional investor, but more importantly, again, provide funding that we haven't seen in the past to meet our infrastructure needs.
So you say we're in the first inning, Jim, and you've certainly given us a sketch of what the seventh inning stretch might look like. But to get from here to there, certainly the government, the federal government in particular, is going to need to play a significant role. If you were to sit down with leaders of the Ways and Means Committee and the Trump administration, and they asked for your opinion on what kind of federal policies can we adopt? What can we do on a federal level that would really stimulate private investment and get this ship to really sail? What would you tell them?
Oh, boy. I think, you know, first part is, look, you've now, through tax reform and through the easing of the corporate tax, have made our companies that much more competitive in the world. You know, actually, the United States should be the area that foreign capital comes to because it has a favorable tax environment now. I think you'll see many foreign companies build out everything from manufacturing to assembling plants to perhaps corporate headquarters. And my point being is, if you've gone this far with tax reform to make us competitive on a global basis and make United States attractive, the only way to continue the flow of capital and the only way to continue to have industry and sovereign funds commit capital is to make them feel comfortable that capital invested will be served well. And that's, again, that'll be served well through infrastructure capabilities, through the ability of goods and services and conveyances being made available. And at the end of the day, tax reform opens up the opportunity set, but infrastructure has to be put in place to have all of these opportunity sets come to life, if you will, or to be fully played out. Again, tax reform, I think, ends up being a terrific way of attracting capital for infrastructure. Now you've got to get government funding, and frankly, we use the 200 to 800 to get to the $1 trillion mark. You know, I would plead the government to look at avenues within the budget and look at, can some of that money be earmarked? You know, what's incredibly important is that I know, depending on which political body is at the microphone, defense is always going to be paramount. Well, people don't realize that infrastructure is incredibly important to defense. It's incredibly important on any level you think of, not only, again, conveyances, not only satellite, not only development, but just the fact of the matter is, when you're the defense industry, the defense of this country is done on so many fronts where infrastructure is paramount, that, again, I would sit down with politicians and say, look, defense is important to you. You need to have infrastructure to implement all your defense funding. You need infrastructure to us to grow and keep capital coming to this country. Tax reform has done a nice job to stimulate interest, and probably will have more, you know, let's say, whether it's Toyota or BMW or Mercedes, they'll probably build even more plants here. But if they don't have the airports, they don't have the water, they don't have the necessary means to have their investment return a favorable rate of return, then they're not going to invest future capital. So I know I'm being a little bit redundant here, but tax reform ends up providing you an excellent way to attract capital, but infrastructure will be paramount in keeping new capital coming in the decades to come.
Our guest has been Jim Ryan. He's Managing Director of National Accounts at Pravassi Capital Partners, which itself just recently launched an infrastructure fund. Jim, really appreciate you taking the time to offer your perspective.
Mike, thank you. And again, I appreciate the opportunity to visit with you and your listeners.